From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Miller Auditorium in Kalamazoo, Michigan, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. We are delighted to be here on the campus of Western Michigan University, and later on we'll be talking to one of its most accomplished alumni, that would be actor and football player Terry Crews. But first, this show marks the beginning of Carl Castle's victory lap, a last tour around the country before he becomes our scorekeeper emeritus in May. And thank you, and we wanted to say thanks to the good people of Kalamazoo who have agreed to rename their city in his honor. From this time forward, it will be known as Carlamazoo.
I like it, Peter.
I like it, too.
I like it very much, Peter.
However, the only tribute Carl wants from you is that you call in to play our games. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hey, Peter, this is Danny Dean from Philadelphia, PA.
Hey, Danny, how are you?
Pretty good, buddy. How are you?
I'm not bad. You sound like... Are you from Philly?
Yes.
Oh, you have the accent, and it's great.
Oh, thank you.
I know.
Well,
what do you do there?
As little as possible.
Yeah, I understand.
I'm a retired steam fitter at Local 420 here in Philadelphia.
Hey, a union guy. And I've heard the phrase pipe fitter, steam fitter, and I've never understood what they do. I mean, do you just stand there with a pipe this size and that size and go, that fits? Put it down,
no,
move on to the next.
Quite. It's not. All you have to do is be smarter than the pipe. That's what it comes down to.
Be smarter than the pipe.
Yeah.
Well, Danny, let me introduce you to our panel. First up, it's a comedian who'll be performing at the Meltdown Show in Hollywood on April 23rd. It's Brian Babylon.
Hey, Danny, what's up? Yep.
Next, it's the stylish woman behind the stylish syndicated advice column, Ask Amy. It's Amy Dickinson.
Hey, Danny.
Next, it's a filmmaker and comedian performing March 22nd at Laughs Incorporated in Toledo, Ohio, and at the Comedy Club on Main in Madison, Wisconsin on April 10th through the 12th. It's Bobcat Goldthwait.
Yep. You know, I was initially going to be a meat cutter, but it turns out I'm not as smart as meat.
That may well be the case.
It's a trial sometimes.
I know. Danny, welcome to the show. You're going to start us off with Who's Carl This Time. Carl Castle, living legend that he is going to recreate for you three quotations from the week's news. Your job, of course, identify or explain just two of them. Do that, you'll win our prize. Carl's voice on your home answering machine. You ready to go?
Yes, I am.
All right, here is your first quote.
That's pretty damn cool.
That was a theoretical physicist named Mark Kamieniowski. He's reacting to news that researchers had found evidence of what?
The Big Bang.
Indeed, yes, the Big Bang, or what came right after the Big Bang. Basically, the beginning of the universe. Physicists all over the world were incredibly excited. They said a discovery that was announced this week was the most revolutionary advance in science in decades. It's amazingly cool. It's deeply important. It is impossible to explain in English. They tried. They compared the universe to a grapefruit, to a pot of boiling pasta, to bread dough being stretched. And then we realized the physicists had just skipped their lunch. And what happened this week is they announced an experiment that proved that they were right. They predicted this result and they got it. And they said this was such an amazing discovery, so specific, that one person made an analogy to imagine if someone were to create a model of the world in which they predicted that there would be this is their example, a little troll doll under a floorboard on the third floor of Ruth Bader Ginsburg's childhood home, right? That was the example. And then this week's discovery was like somebody going to the home, going to the third floor, opening up a floorboard and finding it. That's how amazing this prediction was. That's the example.
So that would be exciting? Like, if I found a Furby, I might be excited, but...
Yeah. I mean, or a Teddy Ruxpin doll. Now, yeah. That is something I'm talking about. Yeah. This is what I don't like. I don't like you're going to try to tell me you understand the universe because you carry the one. I think that's... Get out of here, man.
What do you mean?
I mean, now you understand how the universe works because you figured out some equation. Get out of here. That's who do you think you are, nerd? You're not God. That's my beef with that.
Well, it's a very complicated equation.
Yeah, and this let that be mysteries of the cosmos.
I should have had the brownies that you guys had back exactly. there.
All right, very good. Here, Danny, here is your next quote.
Our Western partners have crossed the line, playing the bear and acting irresponsibly.
That was a world leader who certainly has his fair share of experience dealing with bears. He was railing against the U.S. in a big speech to his parliament this week. Who was it?
That would be that Vladimir Putin.
That Vladimir Putin guy, yeah. This week, Vladimir Putin of Russia annexed Crimea. He just took it. He ran out of tigers to tranquilize, was bored, looked around for something to do. Russia's justification, United Nations Charter, Article 4, Section 2, finders keepers. And this is true. Ukraine is in such bad shape, both in terms of its political leadership and its finances, that they actually announced a fundraiser for their army.
In like Ukraine, a Kickstarter?
Not that bad. More like one of those Red Crossings. If you text to this number, you donate $5 to the army. It's like, hello, can you support our army? It's the public radio approach to national defense.
So they don't have guns, they have mugs.
Exactly. It's like, you know, every now and then the Ukrainian defense minister makes a speech. It's like, we know you enjoy the security and comfort you get from a functioning military. So why don't you take some time to support it? Donate now, and we'll send you a wonderful souvenir mug you can throw at the invading forces. Or, if you're driven from your homes, carry your possessions in this tote bag. You know, what's interesting is, of course, this is happening, and the U.S. is pretty much, it's impotent. What are you going to do? You're going to launch a war? You're going to send in troops? You can't do that. The U.S. instead...
we're the U.S. We never do that.
Yeah, I know. Well, we never do it against countries that can fight back.
Yes.
Or the rule.
What we need to do, we need to get the Ukrainians to discover oil.
Yes.
Then we'll go in.
Then we'll go
in.
Then we'll go in. Be in
then that will help.
Yeah.
You know, I saw Barack Obama did his press conference, and he was talking about blah, 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 blah. And I was realized, like, man, I think, like, today he realized, man, this job sucks. I think today was the day he was like, this job sucks.
All right, Danny, here is your last quote.
You have a better chance of being crushed by a falling vending machine.
That was a staff writer at the Lancaster Online discussing the odds of creating a perfect bracket for what major sporting event?
The NCAA basketball tournament.
Yes, March Madness, the NCAA brackets. It's the time of year when half the country doesn't get any work done so they can follow college basketball. The other half just goes on not getting any work done for the usual reasons. What has become a tradition now, Barack Obama filled out his bracket on ESPN, although he seems distracted by events this time. In the final, he predicted Kentucky would be taken over by Vladimir Putin.
So what is this Warren Buffett's giving $1 billion?
Yeah, this is the exciting. This is why it's actually very exciting even for non-sports fans. Warren Buffett and Quicken Loans have this, I don't know what you call it, a wager. If anybody of the 15 million people who entered this contest write a perfect bracket, i.e. they predict the winner of every single game, they will win $1 billion.
No!
So
yes.
So now that, like, March Madness is going to turn into the Hunger Games.
A little bit.
I actually think that the Ukrainian army should all be trying to guess this right now.
That would help.
Yeah.
Carl, how did Danny do on our quiz?
Danny, you had 3 correct answers. You're a winner. So I'll be doing the voicemail message on your phone answering machine.
Well done. Voicemail. Well done, Danny.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. We want to remind everybody they can join us most weeks back at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Illinois, for tickets. And more information, you can go to WBEZ.org, and you can find a link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. Right now, panel, it's time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Brian, Republicans have had a hard time courting younger voters, so they're turning to a new spokesman, a gentleman named Scott Greenberg. He is the first known Republican what?
Give me a hint.
Well, with him, the party platform is skinny jeans but a big tent.
These are a Republican hipster?
A Republican hipster, the first one found.
Oh. I was going to go with Boy Scout.
Scott Greenberg has got the jeans, the horn-rimmed glasses. He's got the three-day growth of beard. He's the kind of guy who would intern on a public radio show if he didn't want to defund public radio.
I don't want to know what this kid looks like because I know he had because you know hipsters wear hand-me-up clothes.
What does that mean?
Hand-me-up clothes that a little boy hands up to a grown man to put on. They wear those little clothes
tight,
and they have handlebar mustaches, and I'm scared of those.
So this is what I mean. He's doing a great job advocating Republican policy positions because just after 1 minute of listening to that guy, 100% of Democrats wished they owned a gun.
Yeah. What is that?
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Amy Dickinson, Bobcat Goldthwait, and Brian Babylon. And here again is your host at the Miller Auditorium in Kalamazoo, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you so much. Right now it is time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hey, how you doing? I'm Tim Needles from Sound Beach, New York.
You said you're Needles?
I'm Tim Needles.
Oh, yes. Tim Needles. It's your name. It's not a creepy nickname. I was worried for a second.
Are you a tattoo artist?
No, it would be great. I am an artist, but not tattoos yet.
Welcome to the show, Tim. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Tim's topic?
Profiles in courage.
Change starts with an individual, one man or woman brave enough to stand up for what they believe in. Think Rosa Parks and the bus boycott. Jared of the Subway Guys fight against his own pants. This week we read a story about someone standing alone to fight the good fight, no matter the odds. Guess this real story, and you will win Carl's voice in your home answering machine or voicemail. You ready to play?
Yes, I am.
All right, let's hear first from Mr. Bobcat Goldthwait.
Arthur Gruntfest was fired from his job at the Donner Poultry Farm in Asheville, North Carolina, after repeatedly complaining about the treatment of the chickens. After reaching out to authorities and feeling that they turned a deaf ear to his clucking, he valiantly launched his own one-man protest against the slaughterhouse's poor conditions by dressing up in a rooster costume and standing outside the factory's gates every day for 2 weeks. Then things got bad. Unbeknownst to him, the suit was covered with actual Rhode Island red rooster feathers and was infested with chicken lice larvae. Due to his excess sweating, larva clusters from the wet feathers soon embedded in his armpits and nether regions, and Gruntfest suffered a major chicken lice infestation. At first, I thought it was just a heat rash, said Gruntfest from his St. Stephen's Hospital bed, where he is suffering from a bird flu virus common among chickens. I don't know if I feel worse from the illness or the fact that I've been wearing the very thing I was trying to save. But on the plus side, all this media attention has magnified the genocide going on at the plant, but the hospital keeps trying to serve me chicken soup.
A man in a chicken suit pays the ultimate chicken price for his bravery. Your next story of a brave stand comes from Amy Dickinson.
Mahatma Gandhi walked 240 miles to protest the salt tax in India. And Nelson Mandela spent 27 years in prison protesting apartheid. And then there's Kevin Walters, the 21-year-old man who spent over 10 minutes chained to the doors of a highway rest stop this week to protest its demolition. The rest stop is an unimpressive cinder block building, but Walters would like to enshrine it because of something that happened before he was even born. In 1993, his parents pulled into the highway oasis along the Illinois Toll Road after a Phil Collins concert. Something really was in the air that night, oh Lord. One thing led to another, he said, and he was conceived. No word yet on whether any of his siblings will protest the closing of the Parsippany, New Jersey Wawa, where his parents stopped after a Third Eye Blind concert in 1997.
A man chaining himself to a highway rest stop in Illinois because that's where he was conceived. Your last story of someone taking it to the man comes from Brian Babylon.
For most people, eating lunch at work is the best part of the day. But for Candace Northcott in Sanford, Connecticut, it became the fight for her life. One by one, her formerly meat-loving, snack-eating co-workers have gone vegan and becoming self-righteous monsters. I thought it was a joke, said Northcott, but then someone threw away my leftover barbecue in a biohazard trash can. Then she received a memo from her HR director saying that the office had voted to go meat-free. Any meat stored in the fridge will be tossed over fears that meat fumes will infiltrate her coworkers' veggies and hummus plates. Northcott asked a fashion designer friend to create a pantsuit made of smoked meat. Something business casual Lady Gaga would be proud of. The next Monday, she showed up in a beef jerky jacket and smoked ham cummerbund for extra flair. I'll give them fumes. Suddenly, her coworkers started hanging around her cubicle like a pack of drooling, hungry wolves. I knew I had won them over when my jerky jacket went missing from my office. I found the director of HR and the VP of sales in the handicap stall together eating it like a pack of zombies from The Walking Dead. The meat ban was revoked next week. Flaxseed is now a contraband substance.
All right. Tim,
these are your stories of a lonely hero doing what they can. From Bobcat, a guy dressing as a chicken and ending up with a case of chicken lice to protect chicken conditions. From A.B. Dickinson, the story of a man who briefly handcuffed himself to a highway rest stop to prevent its demolition because it was so special to him. And from Brian Babylon, somebody who wore a meat suit to the office to protect the rampant veganism.
Smoked meat.
Smoked meats. Excuse me, Brian. Yes. Which of these is the real story of a courageous stand for what one believes in?
Well, I'm always a fan of the highway rest stop. I'm going to go with number two.
You like highway rest stop.
I enjoy the highway rest stop.
All right. So your choice then is Amy's story. Well, we actually spoke to this lonely hero.
21 years ago, my parents were at a Phil Collins concert. One thing led to another. They ended up at the Oasis, and I was conceived there.
Yeah. That was protester Kevin Walters talking about the night he was conceived at a rest stop outside Chicago, Illinois. Congratulations, Tim. You got it right. You get a point for Amy, and you have won our prize. Carol Castle will record the greeting in your voicemail. Well done, Tim.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for playing with us today, and take care. And now the game where we invite cool people on to answer questions about lame things. Terry Crews was a player in the NFL who's gone on to a successful career as an actor, famous for his roles in Idiocracy and now Brooklyn Nine-Nine in a hilarious series of commercials for Old Spice. But before all that, he was a star player for the championship Western Michigan University Broncos right here in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Terry Crews! Welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me!
What's up, Western Michigan? This is awesome, man. Look, I lost my virginity right there in Zimmerman Hall, man. That's how much Western Michigan means to me.
Terry, do you want us to send somebody over to look for it?
That's long gone, man. That thing's been buried. Let me just tell you that.
So you're a Michigan guy. You grew up where? In Flint, right?
Flint, Michigan, all the way, brother. Born and raised.
And you came to Western Michigan, and you were a football player on the team that went all the way to a championship season, right? Back in, what was it, 90, 89, around there?
Yeah, that's it, 1989. But, first of all, I walked on in
87 and finally got a scholarship and the whole thing and worked my way on the team. And we were one of the first championship teams that ever hit Western Michigan.
So really, you were not recruited. I mean, this is a football school, but I mean, you just walked on and said, I want to be in the team. And they said, ha, they laughed at you.
Well, I had an art scholarship. I actually had an art scholarship.
Wow.
Wait a minute.
That's how you lose your virginity here.
Yeah. Now, I want to ask you, it turns out different people know you for different things. There are like fans who know you for the movie Idiocracy, where you play the President of the United States.
Yes.
There are people who watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and there are a lot of people who know you from these amazing series of very funny Old Spice commercials.
Yeah, power! I gotta say that at least once. It's so weird because I have fans in different areas. It's so crazy. I go to the mall, it's white chicks.
Yep,
you know what I mean? And I'm like,
oh yeah, the movie White. It's not you saying white chicks are your fans. You were in the movie White Chicks.
Yeah. I'm like, no, the movie. The thing is that, you know, I get fathers coming up to me like, how does my daughter know you? I'm like, man, I'm in a movie, brother. I don't know your kid, okay? But it's really crazy, you know, when I go to church, it's like everybody hates Chris, and, you know, they love that show, and the Old Spice thing has become a phenomenon. We literally have changed advertising forever. You may not like it, but you'll never forget it.
Right, I just saw one that just came out in which you play yourself about to shave yourself, and you play one of your own hairs.
Denzel can't do that. Denzel Washington can't even do that.
That's right. You were actually, you've become, among many other things that we've been discussing, a legitimate action star. You were in the Expendables movies.
Yes.
With Stallone and Schwarzenegger, among many other guys. Did you, like, compare bodybuilding notes with them?
No, you know what? Let me tell you, the highlight of my professional life, period, was have Arnold. Arnold was on one side of me, and Sly was on the other, and Sly was like, look at his arms. His arms are amazing. And I was like, look at the definition. He's amazing on his arms. It's an incredible definition. And I'm going, oh, my God, this is the truth. These are the reasons why you work out. Both of these guys launched 10 million workouts. You know
right.
what I mean?
But before we go to the game, we have a question. We understand that you have a nickname for yourself?
I call myself the amusement park. That's because I'm funny and scary at the same time. That's
now,
I like that.
Now, I like that too, but in what context do you use that nickname for yourself?
Well, you know, it's funny because I used to use it in auditions, which was crazy, because what they would do, you know, first of all, when you're black in Hollywood, you know, your first role is going to be on a crime drama. That's, everybody knows that.
Right.
It was CSI Miami, and I walked in, and I remember looking down at the casting agent like, what you looking at? And she was like, you win, you got it, you got the part. And half of my role, when I started my career, was off intimidation. And then what would happen is I got on the set, and then I would flip it and be funny. And that's where the comedy started coming in, and people started recognizing me as a comedian. So I use both as needed. You know what I'm saying? It's one of those things that I realized that was my way in, but what was going to keep me here was the funny. I still do it on Brooklyn Nine-Nine all the time.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, it's also good, you can use that nickname. You're like, I know you're a happily married man, so maybe on a certain evening you might say, hey, want to feel like a ride in the amusement park?
No, she's used to that game.
Okay? Yeah,
she's
not gonna
used to that a whole lot. Okay?
She's like, Terry, get out of here.
Yeah.
She's got the lifetime pass. She's
yeah,
like,
I understand.
How tall do you have to be to get out?
Well, Terry Crews, we are delighted to talk to you. We've asked you here to play a game we're calling...
They're having all-you-can-eat shrimp cocktail buffet on the Lido deck.
So your name is Cruz, but what do you know about cruise ships?
Wow.
The floating behemoths that bring all the comforts of a Short Hills, New Jersey mall to the world's waters.
Yes.
We're going to ask you three questions about cruise ships. Answer two right, you win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice, on their voicemail. Carl, who is actor Terry Crews playing for?
Meg McAllister of Waterford, Michigan.
All right, Terry, you ready to play? She's probably right here.
I'm ready.
She's a homegirl. First question. The Crystal Cruise cruise ship line out of Japan has a special class of employees. What is their job? A, to stand on fake crow's nests pretending to scan the Caribbean Sea for icebergs.
Oh, God.
B, to dress up really nice and dance with the lonely old rich ladies. Or C, to randomly check toilets, wastebaskets, and other receptacles for any sign of intestinal illness breaking out.
That's a tough job.
It
I gotta
is.
Go with C, because there have been so many of those lately. They gotta make sure that, you know, there's no big time disease about to happen on this ship.
It would make sense, but actually it was B, to dress up nice and dance with the lonely old rich ladies.
Oh,
they're called ambassador hosts.
This is crazy. They're pimping people.
No, they're ambassador hosts. This is a wonderful thing. They're usually retired gentlemen who are excellent dancers. That is the first requirement. And they're supposed to provide elegant companionship, conversation, and dance for the single ladies. Tipping is optional. All right, you still have two more chances. You can still win this. It's not only humans who have to endure cruises. Which of these is a real headline that proved cruises aren't safe for any species? A, ghost ship crewed by cannibal rats, presumably sunk. B, tragic end to shipboard aquarium as passengers mistake it for sushi buffet. Or C, dolphins bruise themselves on cruise ship hull as they try to flip it up in the air.
Oh, wow. Oh, I'm going with A, the ghost ship
in crewed by cannibal rats.
That sounds like a winner.
The Western Michigan community agrees with you, and you were all right.
Yeah.
You may remember. This was the abandoned ship. This is this old hulk of a ship that got loose from its tow and was floating toward Great Britain in January. Everybody was freaking out because people were speculating that the rats on board had turned cannibal. This cannibal rat ship was going to hit England.
So are they eating other rats? Or you can't. Cannibals eat each other, right?
A cannibal rat would presumably eat other rats.
Eating each other.
Yeah. They'd eaten everything else.
Like if a rat eating a human is just a lucky rat. You've gotten one right with one to go. Last question.
Okay.
While getting violently ill may seem to be the worst thing that can happen on a cruise ship, not to mention falling overboard, one passenger had to deal with something far worse. What was this passenger's complaint to his cruise line? A, that the cruise's stand-up comedian made jokes about dumb people, and as a dumb person, he was offended. B, that it was too cold and cloudy to get a tan on his cruise to Alaska. Or C, that the ship tilted to the right just as he was finally about to beat his wife at shuffleboard.
Oh, I gotta go. You know what, man? People can complain about everything.
This is true.
I'm going with B. It's too cold
to get a tan.
Alaska. It's too cold to get a suntan.
They like it, and they're behind you, and you're right. That's what the complaint was.
I was nervous.
People can whine. They do that.
The man complained, but all cruises are meant to be hot. That was his logic as to why he...
No, Peter. They're meant to be hot.
Yeah, you can find a list of great complaints made to cruise lines on the internet. One of our other favorites was a woman complained that she went on a celebrity cruise and there were no celebrities. How did Terry Crews do on our show?
He had two correct answers, Peter, so he wins from Meg McAllister of Waterford, Michigan.
Well done, Terry.
Waterford in the house.
Yes. Terry, whenever you're here at Western Michigan, you're a winner. Thanks so much for playing.
Oh, you got it. Love you guys. Love
Terry
you
Crews.
Terry
Crews. Stars in the award-winning series, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and the movie Single Moms Club out now. Terry Crews, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you.
Bye-bye.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H. I got a gal in Kalamazoo. Don't want to boast, but I know she's the toast of Kalamazoo, Zoo, 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 Zoo.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Bobcat Goldthwait, Brian Babylon, and Amy Dickinson. And here again is your host at the Miller Auditorium in Kalamazoo, Peter Sagal.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you very much. In just a minute, Carl picks his beloved North Carolina Tar Heels to make it to the Rimal Four. It's the Listener Limerick Challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Amy, a week after his approval rating hit an all-time low, President Obama lashed out against those who criticized what?
Does it involve, like, his dancing? Something personal about him?
Yes, something personal about him. He's tired of the criticism.
About his voice.
I'll give you a hint.
Ears?
It's like Jordache is the new Benghazi.
Oh, his mom jeans?
His mom jeans. In fact, he says they're not mom jeans. He's been repeatedly criticized, President Obama has, for his jeans. The mom jeans he wore to the All-Star game, the jeans he wore in the picture when he's in the phone with Vladimir Putin a little while ago, the jeggings he wore at the State of the Union. But he says, quote, "The truth is, generally, I look very sharp in jeans, which is exactly how a guy who wears mom jeans would put it."
You know the problem?
Yeah.
People don't know this, man. He's tall, but he has, like, kind of hips. He's a little hip.
Oh, God. You're really helping. You're helping him, you're, Brian.
What do you mean by hips? What do you
mean? He has, like... I'm not going to say he has lady hips, but...
Are you saying the president has a booty? Is that what you're saying?
No. Oh. A booty is different from hips. A booty goes back. Hips go out. Hips go that away. Booty goes that away.
Right.
Yeah.
So he's saying he has childbearing hips, the president.
Kind
does.
Of.
What are you saying? But this whole criticism of the president wearing jeans, it's ridiculous. All presidents have worn jeans. They should have a museum like they do of, like, the first lady's dresses at the Smithsonian. They should have the president's jeans. You could have Bush's Wranglers he wore at his ranch.
Now, hold on. Now, that's who can wear some damn jeans.
Who?
Bush.
W.
Yeah.
He wore some jeans.
No,
like,
hips on him.
Woo. You might not like his policy, but he rocked them jeans.
Brian, a new company has created a way to help women get home more easily and comfortably after a rash late-night adventure. They've created what?
The Brian Babylon app?
You wish.
I know. Give me a slight hint.
I'll say it's a kit to help you avoid something that is common among, or at least legendarily a problem among, a single woman who end up out in the town. You know what I'm talking about?
A machine gun?
Like... Does it involve the walk of shame?
It is, in fact, the walk of shame kit. Thank you. Amy gets the point.
I'm sorry.
But she gets my point?
No.
She gets my point? What is that?
I don't want his point. I'm sorry.
What?
I don't want his point.
Then you should
take it.
Something.
What are we doing? There's no rules here? Yeah. When did this become the Outback Steakhouse?
I was trying to help. I didn't want to take it.
All right, I'll turn to Carl. Carl, who should get the point?
Amy doesn't want it, so we'll give it to Brian.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you.
So here's the thing. If you bring along, when you go head out to the club for the evening, if you just bring your special walk of shame kit, you'll have with you a backpack to carry it, which will look great with your little black dress, wipes, a pre-pasted toothbrush, got a little toothpaste on it. It's got a dress, flip-flops, and sunglasses. That's for those of you who have a one-night stand with Gilligan. On his island.
I would be
Isn't
disturbed
it bad
if,
luck?
If you found a woman and you're looking through her bag and she's like, why does she have a disguise?
Yeah.
How ashamed is she of me?
Brian.
Yeah.
You're a single guy, right?
Yes.
And as single men know, dating is hard, which is why a recent study reveals that the male peacock must resort to doing what to score a date?
Christian Mingle?
Yeah. All right, give me a hint.
I'll give you a hint. Well, the other peacocks are looking at him and going, I'll have what he's having.
They walk around making like orgasm noises?
Exactly right. They fake sex noises.
Wouldn't that make the female peacock go like, well, he doesn't need me?
Well, the peacock, as we know, really runs the whole gamut in seduction. On one hand, his beautiful iridescent plumage, and if that doesn't work, humping noise. Scientists have known that peacocks make these loud vocalizations to attract peahens. But they're just,
hold on.
That's what they're called, peacocks, peahens. When they make that noise, they're giving a little iTunes-style 30-second preview right, of the full-on number to come.
Like, this could be you.
This could be you.
Once again, I'm going to go back. I get mad sometimes when you have these scientists and they, like, get into, like, animal stuff. Like, they know what an animal's doing or thinking. Like, how do you know what that peacock's, you know, he could just be, like, pleasuring his own self, not trying to, like, date somebody. Like, hey, man, I'm doing me over here. If somebody hears it, they want to mate me, cool. But I'm over here doing my own sex thing, making my own sex noises. For me, for myself.
Brian, it sounds like you've said that before.
Yeah.
Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago. And check out this week's How to Do Everything podcast. This week, Mike and Ian tell you how to get treated like a king at a fancy restaurant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. This is Therese calling from Carmichael, California.
Hey, Therese. Where is Carmichael, California?
Carmichael is, like, actually kind of part of Sacramento.
Oh, really? You just don't want to admit that you're from Sacramento?
I don't know if it's that we don't want to admit it or they don't want to admit it.
Right, so it's just best to keep a little distance. I understand.
Yeah.
Welcome to the show, Therese. Carl Castle is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. Your job, of course, fill in that last word or phrase correctly. And two of the limericks do that, you'll be a winner. Here is your first limerick.
We men who can't leap, dip, or prance still want to give parties a chance. Move the neck and the torso and one leg just more so. That's how we might fake a good
dance.
Yes, dance. Very good, Therese. According to, of course, a British study, women prefer men who move their right leg while dancing.
Oh, my God.
Apparently, right leg dancing, quote, signals a man's reproductive quality, unquote.
Right?
Why? Well, having at least one moving part proves that he's alive. Most Mr. Wrights have that in common. And if your man, ladies, does not shake his right leg, just lay him on his back and rub his belly till you find that spot. All right. Here, Therese, is your next limerick.
Meddling Kids, a cartoon movie crew. Let their dogs snack on sweet, groovy chews. But when Roro is said, they're just shaking their heads because they can't understand.
Oh, movie crew.
Yep.
Scooby-Doo?
Yes!
Yeah!
Scooby-Doo, the cartoon dog, his speech impediment has finally been diagnosed. According to a speech pathologist in Wisconsin, Scooby-Doo has rhotic replacement disorder. That's when you put an R in front of words like Roro.
Are these tax dollars
spent? Oh, my God.
But here's the problem. We don't want to diagnose and cure cartoon character speech impediments, right? Do we want Porky Pig to say, that's all, folks? Do we want Elmer Fudd to say, I'm hunting rabbits here in the rural reaches of Ruritania? No. All right, here's your last limerick.
The pulses of poultry fans quicken while dinosaur worms look quite stricken. Huge bones with a beak were found by Hell's Creek. We've dug up a 10-foot-tall...
chicken.
Right.
Whoa.
Very good. American paleontologists have unearthed a new species of dinosaur in South Dakota, which they, the paleontologists, describe as, quote, the chicken from hell. It was a 10-foot-tall, 550-pound, quote, chicken that would kill you, unquote. If it hadn't gone extinct, we may be living in a very different world where giant chickens ruled the earth, and their favorite restaurant was Kentucky Fried People.
And it actually would have looked like a chicken?
Yeah, basically it had a big, narrow head like a bird, and it had a big beak, and they think it had feathers.
Yeah, but how do you know what their feather game was looking like? You're just going to assume that it had chicken feathers like that? That's rude. Mm. It could have had peacock feathers like we spoke of earlier.
They could have, it's true.
But it could have been a big peacock with chicken sprinkles.
Carl, how did Therese do?
She had three correct answers, Peter, so she wins our prize.
Congratulations. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Now it's time to go to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl Castle, can you give us the scores?
Brian Babylon and Amy Dickinson are tied for first. Each has 3 points. Bobcat Goldthwait has 2.
Okay. Bobcat, you are up first because you're in third place. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. Because gay and lesbian groups were excluded, the mayors of Boston and New York boycotted this year's blank parades.
St. Patrick's Day.
Right. President Obama made an appearance on the Ellen DeGeneres Show Thursday to promote his blank plan.
His health care.
Right. On Monday morning, news anchors hid under their desks as a 4.4 magnitude earthquake hit blank.
Los Angeles.
Right. For the second time in the last year, a psychic show in the UK was canceled due to blank.
Poor ratings.
Unforeseen circumstances. Best known for his appearances on The Tonight Show, comedian blank died last weekend at age 78.
David Brenner.
Right. On Tuesday, the New York Knicks introduced former player and championship-winning coach blank as their new president.
Ronald McDonald.
No. Phil Jackson. According to a British study, the majority of newlyweds have blanked with their wedding guests.
Slept.
Yes. It's true. Turns out marriage is more than a celebration of two people joining together for life. It's also a celebration of joining with other people for much shorter periods of time and then presumably regretting it. 6 out of 10 newlyweds in this study admitted to having slept with at least 2 of their wedding guests. So, if you think that's a rule and you're about to get married and your fiancé suggests a small family affair, get out now.
You met my uncle, Dad.
Yeah. Yeah. Carl, how did Bobcat do in our quiz?
5 correct answers for 10 more points, and he now has 12 points and the lead.
Well done.
Woo!
Well, we have flipped a coin, and Amy has elected to go last, so Brian, you're up next. Fill in the blank. On Tuesday, President Obama awarded blanks to 24 veterans.
Medal of Honor.
Right. On Thursday, Michelle Obama arrived in Beijing for an official week-long visit to blank.
China?
Yes. That was a tough one.
Whoa.
A teenager from New Jersey was arrested Thursday after he managed to elude security and climb to the top of the new blank in New York.
World Trade Center.
Right. After problems with battery fires led to a year-long review, the FAA announced this week that Boeing's blank planes are, in fact, safe.
Dreamliner.
Yes. A man who tried to rob a casino in Las Vegas was quickly tackled and apprehended by blank.
Dancers.
Oh, not just dancers. The male strippers known as the Thunder from Down Under. Because of back spasms on Tuesday, blank was forced to pull out of the Arnold Palmer Invitational.
Tiger Woods.
Yes. TV pitchman Kevin Trudeau, best known for his late night blanks, was sentenced to 10 years in jail for cheating customers.
Infomercial.
Yes. A tourist in Italy broke the leg off a 19th century statue when he tried to blank.
Take a selfie.
Yes! Right! Good.
Wow. Good round.
Yeah. In the zone.
The drunken satyr statue was a copy in the Academy of Fine Arts in Brera, Italy, and when a drunken tourist, no relation, tried to sit in the statue's lap to take a selfie, the satyr's leg fell off, totally ruining the selfie. Carl, how did Brian do in our quiz?
Brian had 7 correct answers for 14 more points. He now has 17 points, and Brian has the lead.
That was very impressive.
Whoa,
very impressive.
Great round, Brian.
So, how many then does Amy need to win?
7 to tie, 8 to win outright.
All right, here we go. Amy, this is for the game Fill in the Blank. In testimony on Thursday, the son-in-law of blank said he hadn't known about the attacks on 9/11 in advance.
Osama bin Laden.
Right. The Washington Post reported Tuesday that a new surveillance system created by the blank is recording all of the phone calls in an unspecified foreign country.
The NSA?
Right. After a 4-year criminal investigation, on Wednesday, the Justice Department reached a $1.2 billion settlement with automaker blank.
Toyota.
Right. At a town hall meeting in Flemington, New Jersey this week, Governor blank was questioned about the bridge scandal.
Christie.
Right. A New Mexico man was forced to call his neighbor for help after he woke up one morning and discovered he was blanked.
In his neighbor's house?
No, he woke up to discover that he was trapped in his house by tumbleweeds. According to information released this week, episode 7 in the blank series will take place 30 years after Return of the Jedi.
Star Wars.
Right, after pulling the popular game from app stores in February for being too addictive, this week the creator of Blank confirmed that he's bringing it back.
Oh, shoot. It's the Flappy Bird flapping.
Flappy Bird, a Subway sandwich maker in the UK, is in trouble after using the restaurant's bread oven to blank.
Warm up, take a nap in.
No, geez. No, she used the bread oven to dry her wet socks. You know what it's like? Your feet get wet on the way to work, you're cold, you didn't bring a pair of socks. Look, there's a dry, very warm place not being used at the moment. After customers complained, a Subway spokesman immediately issued an apology and then hurried to take her damp laundry out of the microwave. Carl, did Amy do well enough to win?
She needed 7 at least to tie, but she only had 6 correct answers.
No.
So with 17 points, Brian Rebelon is this week's champion.
Yes, well done. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists to predict what will be the next great discovery about our universe. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations. And Kobo, partnering with independent bookstores to provide 4 million ebook titles in a variety of e-readers. Store locator at indiebound.org. The Cy Sims Foundation, supporting advances in science, education, and the arts since 1985. CySimsFoundation.org. And Progressive Insurance, helping people shop for car insurance at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, Benevolent Overlord. Philip Gotica writes our limericks. Our CFO is Andy Yen. Our intern is Every Seth You Take Kelly. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Special thanks this week to the crew at the Miller Auditorium. BJ Litterman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Waltrover, Miles Dernboss, and Emily Acton. Technical direction is from Lorna White. Our production coordinator is Robert Newhouse. Our senior producer is Ian Chillog. And the executive producer of Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mr. Michael Linwood Danforth. Now, panel, what will be the next big discovery about the universe? Brian Babylon.
They find that weird little planet from The Little Prince.
Aww. A little rose on it? How adorable. Amy Dickinson.
A scientist from Western Michigan University will discover that the hokey pokey really is what it's all about.
And Bobcat Goldthwait.
Yes, indeed. We're going to find out that the entire universe really is a single molecule on the big toe of some hippie's toenail.
And if any of those things are discovered, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thank you also to Brian Babylon, Amy Dickinson, Bobcat Goldthwait. Thanks to Gordon Bowler and everyone at WMUK. And our great audience here at the Miller Auditorium at Western Michigan University in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Thanks to all of you out there for listening. I'm Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. This is NPR.